Okay, so we are in Exodus. Got to get this thing off my. Okay, I got it. I got it.
Okay, good job.
Okay, we're in Exodus 14. We just left off from there. We went through the different plagues and we went through the thing and we looked at, how God says to Moses, or it says the Lord spake unto Moses or said unto Moses, and it was in a number of chapters at the beginning, but it was also many other places, and we're going to continue to see that. And a great emphasis here in these books is what God said to Moses. And remember when Moses started out, Moses said, they won't believe that you talked to me. And he said, and they'll say, who is God? And he said, tell them I am sent me, which we know to be an idiom, a Hebrew idiom, meaning I will be everything you need me to be for you, right? And thinking back on 2 Timothy 3:16 and 17, it says all scripture is given by inspiration of God or is God breathed for doctrine, reproof, and correction, that the man of God may be perfect, truly perfected, or truly equipped or completely equipped and furnished for every good work. And certainly when God spoke that to Moses, that was included, right? He would equip Moses for the job that he called him to. He's not a guy, in life, you could get a job or somebody could assign you a job, but not give you all the tools or all the authority or any number of things that you need to do the job well. And they could neglect to give them to you or not have the ability to give them to you, right? Maybe you've run into that situation here and there. But with God, when He calls us to a job, He gives us everything we need to complete the job, to do the good work. So here we are in chapter 14 of Exodus, and Moses, this great man, has led Israel, and they're getting ready, or they've left Egypt after the plagues and all that stuff that happened. And it starts off in chapter 14. It says, and the Lord spake unto Moses, saying, speak unto the children of Israel, that they turn and encamp before Pihahiroth, between Migdol and the sea, over against Baal Zephon, before it shall ye can't encamp by the sea. For okay, verse 3 is a cool verse because God tells Moses what Pharaoh is going to do and what he's going to say. So it says, Pharaoh will say of the children of Israel, they are entangled in the land, the wilderness hath shut them in. What great military intelligence! Countries would pay fortunes and employ people and even have people die to get intelligence, right? Military intelligence or intelligence about what your enemy's doing. Here, God just tells Moses ahead of time what Pharaoh's going to do. And it says in verse 4, and I will harden Pharaoh's hearts that he shall follow after them, and I will be honored upon Pharaoh and upon all his host, meaning his army, his armies, that the Egyptians may know that I am the Lord. And they did so. They did it. And it was told the king of Egypt that the people fled, and the heart of Pharaoh and his servants was turned against the people. And they said, why have we done this, that we have let Israel go from serving us? It's like, why do we do this? We had these guys do all the hard work, and we just let them go. Why do we do that? Are we stupid or something? So, and of course, the reason for this and why this has happened is because God said what? That I may be honored upon Pharaoh and upon all his hosts. Because why? Because they had rejected God and they had done injury to his people. So, verse 6. And he, Pharaoh, made ready his chariot and took his people with him. And he took 600 chosen chariots and all the chariots of Egypt and the captains over every one of them. Chariots, I looked up chariots in a Bible dictionary, and it's kind of interesting. And they said, and I don't know how accurate they are, but it said the chariots were first used in Mesopotamia, but it was more like a conveyance for rich people, like a carriage. But then later on, during the time of Egypt's power and greatness, and even the Romans, chariots became a means of war or a use. It was kind of like the tank. In modern day, you have the foot soldiers, you have the grunts, as they're called, the infantry. And then in those days later on, they had cavalry, which was a big deal. But here they had the chariots, and they'd have a driver, and they would have a guy or sometimes two guys behind the driver, and they would have shields for protection, and they would have things. You ever see Ben-Hur, and they have the spearhead sticking out, and it cuts the spokes off one of the wheels. And then they had a guy with a bow or a guy with a sword, and they'd charge through the infantry of the other army, and they'd just cut them down. And this was a great advance in military technology. Except chariots were only good on land that was basically flat and open. And if you went into the woods or you went into mountains or very hilly areas, then they were worthless. Kind of interesting. But where Israel? Israel's out in the wilderness. It's kind of like desert, plain, flat. There's not trees out there. So they're chasing them with all the chariots of Egypt. And the Lord hardened the heart of Pharaoh, king of Egypt, and he pursued after the children of Israel. And the children of Israel went out with a high hand, meaning they went out boldly, or they marched out boldly. When they left Egypt, they were pretty pumped. They were like, okay, we're leaving, and you guys gave us all your jewels and silver and gold, and now we're leaving. So they went out like that. But the Egyptians pursued after them all the horses and chariots of Pharaoh and his horsemen and army, and overtook them encamping by the sea beside Pi-hahiroth before Behel Zephon or Zephon. And when Pharaoh drew nigh, the children of Israel lifted up their eyes, and behold, the Egyptians marched after them, and they were sore afraid, meaning very afraid, right? It's King's English. Sore means very. And the children of Israel cried out unto the Lord. I don't know if they really cried out unto the Lord, or they said, oh my God, what's going on? Because they said unto Moses, because there were no graves in Egypt, hast thou taken us away to die in the wilderness? Wherefore hast thou dealt with us to carry us forth out of Egypt? This is the first time, of numerous times later on in the wilderness that Israel turns on Moses. He's come in, he's freed them from their slavery, which they never really asked for. They just asked for God to lighten their burdens, but God intended to set them free. And so they said, why did you take us out of Egypt to die? In the wilderness. Well, you're going to die somewhere. What difference does it make if it's Egypt or the wilderness or in paradise or anywhere else? But that's what they said. They said, why don't you take us out here to die in the wilderness? Verse 13, and Moses said unto the people, fear ye not, stand still and see the salvation of the Lord, which he will show unto you today. For the Egyptians whom ye have seen today, you shall see them again no more forever. Salvation of the Lord, right? Remember, we talked about how God sent different men, and these Old Testament guys like Noah, like Joseph, they were saviors. And here Moses was a savior. God sent him to save Egypt, to save Israel out of Egypt, to get them out, to save them, to bring them to the promised land so he could fulfill their promises. So Moses said unto the people, verse 13, fear ye not, stand still and see the salvation of the Lord, which he will show to you today. For the Egyptians whom you have seen today, ye shall see them again no more forever. The Lord shall fight for you, and ye shall hold your peace. He's saying, God's going to fight the battle for you, so shut up. Right? That's what he's saying to him. Shut up. Just pay attention. See what he does. Verse 15. And the Lord said unto Moses, wherefore criest thou unto me? Speak unto the children of Israel that they go forward. But lift thou up thy rod and stretch out thine hand over the sea and divide it. And the children of Israel shall go on dry ground through the midst of the sea. And I, behold, I will harden the hearts of the Egyptians, and they shall follow them, follow Israel. And I will get me honor upon Pharaoh and upon all his host, all his army, upon his chariots and upon his horsemen. And the Egyptians shall know that I am the Lord when I have gotten me honor upon Pharaoh and upon his chariots and upon his horsemen. And the angel of God, which went before the camp of Israel, removed and went behind them. And the pillar of the cloud went from before their face and stood behind them. And it came between the camp of the Egyptians and the camp of the of Israel. And it was a cloud of darkness to them, to the Egyptians, but it gave light by night to these, to the Israelites, so that the one came not near the other all the night. You know, remember when we went through the plagues, how, you know, the lice, I think, came, but they didn't go to Israel. And the hail came, but it didn't hail on Israel in Goshen. And then that darkness for 3 days that it says, it described it as thick, a thick darkness. And it was in Egypt so that nobody could go anywhere or do anything, but not in Goshen where the Israelites were. They had light. Well, here, this cloud came between Israel and the Egyptians, so the Egyptians couldn't see anything. They couldn't move forward, but it was a light for the Israelites. So they couldn't come near them all night. And Moses stretched out his hand over the sea, and the Lord caused the sea to go back by a strong east wind all that night, and made the sea dry land, and the waters were divided. And the children of Israel went into the midst of the sea upon dry land. Woohoo! And the waters were a wall unto them on their right hand and on their left. You've ever seen the movie Ten Commandments? You know, they do this pretty cool. You know, the waters go back, and it's like fountains shooting up, and it's walls of water on the side, but it doesn't come back. And they walk across. And it's got to be pretty wide for that many people to get across in one night. So it must have been an incredible sight. And I'm sure everybody was a little nervous as they walked out. But, you know, they did. And the Egyptians pursued and went in after them to the midst of the sea, in the middle of the sea, even all Pharaoh's horses and his chariots and his horsemen. And it came to pass that in the morning watch, the Lord looked unto the host of the Egyptians through the pillar of fire and of the cloud, and troubled the host of the Egyptians. He troubled them. He caused them problems. And he took off their chariot wheels, that they drave them heavily. You know, if the wheel, you ever see, you know, a wheel come off a car, and so then there's nothing but the axle. And it goes and it hits the ground and it just kind of grinds, and the car or the vehicle can't go. That's what happened to these chariots. Now, you know, these chariots were instruments of war. And if you know anything about soldiers, when you have instruments of war, one of the things that soldiers do when they're not fighting is they take care of their equipment because their life will depend upon it. Mm-hmm. And these chariots, I am sure, when they went into battle, were in tip-top shape. But God caused the wheels to come off. Mm-hmm. So no matter what they did, it didn't matter because God was there doing this. So, so he took off their chariot wheels in verse 25, that they drave them heavily. went right into the soft sand, so that the Egyptians said, "Let us flee from the face of Israel, for the Lord Jehovah fighteth for them against the Egyptians." And the Lord said unto Moses, "Stretch out thine hand over the sea, that the waters may come again upon the Egyptians, upon their chariots and upon their horsemen." And Moses stretched forth his hand over the sea, and the sea returned to his strength when the morning appeared, and the Egyptians fled against it, and the Lord overthrew the Egyptians in the midst of the sea, and the waters returned. Wow. And covered the chariots and the horsemen and all the host of Pharaoh that came into the sea after them. There remained not so much as one of them. But the children of Israel walked upon the dry land in the midst of the sea, and upon the, and the waters were a wall unto them on the right hand and on the left. Thus the Lord saved Israel at that day out of the hands of the Egyptians, and Israel saw the Egyptians dead upon the seashore. And Israel saw the great work which the Lord did upon the Egyptians, and the people feared, or were in great awe and respect of Jehovah, and believed Jehovah and his servant Moses. Wow, what a great example, what a great witness, and what, you know, God told him what he was going to do, and he did it. What a great thing. Amazing. Again, God saved them. It was God that saved them. And they feared or respected Jehovah because of it. They believed him. And Moses, his servant. What a great thing. So again, God supplied Moses with all that he needed and saved Israel. Right? He gave him everything he needed for the situation. He was completely equipped to do the job that God called him to. Now, chapter 15 begins from verses 1 through 21. And Moses and Israel sing a song of praise and thanksgiving to God for delivering them. So they danced and they sang and, you know, did all that stuff. And it says in verse 21, and Miriam, that was the sister of Moses, it says in verse 20, Miriam the prophetess, she was a prophetess, which means what? Well, she had the Spirit of God upon her and she spoke for God, right? Mm-hmm. And to God. So Miriam, the prophetess, the sister of Aaron and of Moses, obviously, took a timbrel in her hand, and all the women went out with her with timbrels and with dances. And Miriam answered them, "Sing ye unto the Lord, for he hath triumphed gloriously, and the horse and his rider hath he thrown into the sea." So Moses brought Israel from the Red Sea, and they went out into the wilderness of Shur. And they went 3 days in the wilderness and found no water. So after this great miracle, so they were in Israel. I mean, they were in Egypt. They saw the 10 plagues. They saw God deliver them. They saw the Egyptians give them their gold and silver and tell them to get out. They saw God deliver them at the Red Sea. And they go 3 days in the wilderness, 3 days from the great miracle at the Red Sea. And when they came to Marah, they could not drink the waters of Marah, for they were bitter. Therefore, the name of it was called Marah, which means bitterness. Go figure. And the people murmured against Moses, saying, "What shall we drink?" 3 days in the wilderness. And so the people murmured and complained, and this is the second time that they complained to Moses since they have left. First time they said, "You brought us in the wilderness to die. You brought us out of Egypt." Now they said, you know, "What are we going to drink?" And he cried unto the Lord, and the Lord showed him a tree, which when he cast into the waters were made sweet. There he made for them a statute and an ordinance. And there he proved them, or tried them. And he said, "If thou wilt diligently, This is a great thing here. He says, if thou wilt diligently hearken to the voice of the Lord thy God, and will do that which is right in his sight, and will give ear to his commandments, and keep all his statutes, I will put none of these diseases upon thee, which I have brought upon the Egyptians. For I am the Lord that what? Healeth thee. I am the Lord that healeth thee. This is a promise from God and a declaration. I am the Lord that healeth thee. Jehovah Rophika. What a great thing. And they came to Elim, where there were 12 wells of water and 60 and 10 palm trees. So 70 palm trees. And they encamped there by the waters. So, you know, it was like an oasis, right? A big oasis. And they camped there and they stayed there for a while. So, but you know, 3 days in and they're running out of water and they forgot all about what happened at the Red Sea that quick. It was that quick that they forgot. Now, we don't know how long it took to get to the oasis, but I guess they had enough water at that place. You know, they could fill up and get their water bags filled and take care of the animals and everything like that. And then they moved on and they came to this oasis. And they took their journey. Let me go to chapter 16. And they took their journey from Elim, and all the congregation of the children of Israel came unto the wilderness of Sin, which is between Elim and Sinai, on the 15th day of the second month after their departing out of the land of Egypt. The second month, that would be the month after Nisan or Abib, right? That was the first month. That's when they had the Passover. I looked at a thing today in Jesus Christ of Prophecy, but I can't remember what the second month was. But it's there if you want to look it up. And the whole congregation of Israel murmured against Moses and Aaron in the wilderness. So they came there a second after departing, and they murmured a third time. It's a month after they've been gone, right? They've been out there a month now. And, you know, they've had everything taken care of. They've been protected. God's provided them with water. And now they're murmuring and complaining against Moses and Aaron. Pretty crazy. So they do this 8 times in verses 2 through 12. So, and the children of Israel said unto them, Would God we had died by the hand of the Lord in the land of Egypt, when we sat by the flesh pots, and when we did eat bread to the full. For ye have brought us forth into the wilderness to kill this whole assembly with hunger. You know, they're running out of food. It's been 2 months, and they didn't have a lot of time to, you know, make provisions and stock up and even probably didn't even have the means to carry that much. So he says, you know, he came, brought us out here to starve us. Then said the Lord unto Moses, again, God talks to Moses because he's the man, he's been called. And God's got to supply answers for him because he's the one that's got to do it. Behold, I will rain bread from heaven for you, and the people shall go out and gather a certain rate every day, that I may prove them, I may try them, whether they will walk in my law or not. Yeah, this is a test. We're going to see how they measure up. You know, they thought it was better to die in Egypt as slaves than die as free men of hunger in the wilderness. Think about that. You know, if you study history, which probably most of you don't give it a thought, but I love history. And because of the word, I've thought about this. People many times, if people don't have God and they don't believe God, they'd rather be slaves, or they'd rather be in a system where they have security, even though they have less, and they'll give up their freedom just so they won't starve. And that's the the bottom line. You know, when people came to America back in the early days to settle, the reason they came was for religious freedom. They came so that they could believe God, and they believed God would take care of them. You know, some didn't, some failed, some got scared, but a great many of them survived and lived and prospered because they looked to God to be their sufficiency. And they didn't care about the security of living under a king, you know, because they would rather be free. So these guys, on the other hand, thought, wow, it's better to die. It's better to live and eat of the flesh pots in Egypt and have my belly full of bread than to die a free man in the wilderness. So God says, well, I'm going to rain food down or bread down from heaven. Verse 5, and it shall come to pass that on the sixth day they shall prepare that which they bring in, and it shall be twice as much as they gather daily. And Moses and Aaron said unto all the children of Israel at even, then ye shall know that the Lord hath brought you out from the land of Egypt. And in the morning, then ye shall see the glory of the Lord, for that he heareth your murmuring against the Lord. And what are we that ye murmur against us? You know, there's that murmuring, complaining, moaning, whining. And Moses said, this shall be when the Lord shall give you in the evening flesh to eat, and in the morning bread to the full, for that the Lord heareth your murmurings, which ye murmur against him, and which are ye. Your murmurings are not against us, me and Aaron, Moses and Aaron, but against Jehovah. You know, I didn't come here to get you out of Egypt because I wanted to do it or because it was this burning desire in my heart. I was happy in Midian. And God called me and he said, you got to go back and get my people so I can keep my promise to Joseph and to Abraham and Isaac and Jacob. And so he went and he went back. So he said, you're not complaining against me. You're not complaining against Aaron. You're complaining against Jehovah. And Moses spake unto Aaron and say unto all the congregation of the children of Israel, come near before the Lord, for he hath heard your whining. And it came to pass as Aaron spake unto the whole congregation of the children of Israel that they looked toward the wilderness, and behold, the glory of the Lord appeared in the cloud. So there was a brightness in a cloud, you know, glory. And the Lord spake unto Moses, saying, here we go. Lord spake unto Moses again. I have heard the murmurings of the children of Israel. Speak unto them at evening. At even ye shall eat flesh, and in the morning ye shall be filled with bread, and ye shall know that I am the Lord your God. You know, God had to speak to Moses. Number one, there was no written word, right? He didn't have any word or any promises written down to go to, other than, you know, God told him in the beginning, I'll be for you whatever I'll be. So Moses looked at him, and God would give him the answers as he went along. So he spoke to Moses, and this is what he said. And it came to pass, verse 13, that in the even, the quails came up and covered the camp. And in the morning, the dew lay around about the host. And when the dew that lay was gone up, behold, upon the face of the wilderness, there lay a small round thing, as small as hoarfrost on the ground. And when the children of Israel saw it, they said one to another, it is manna, for they knew not what it was. And manna, of course, means, what's that? What is it? In other words, they didn't know what it was. It was just, what? You know, when God said that he would rain bread from heaven, they probably had a totally different mind picture of what, yeah, Peter floating down, you know, gently. But instead, there's this little thing laying on the ground all over the place. And when the children of Israel saw it and said one to another, it is manna, for they knew not what it was, Moses said unto them, this is the bread which the Lord hath given you to eat. I'm sure they mused in their minds and thought, what the hell's going on? This is the thing which the Lord hath commanded. Gather it to every man according to his eating, an omer for every man according to the number of your persons. Take ye every man for them which are in his tents, And the children of Israel did so, and gathered some more, some less. So they gathered according to what they could eat, you know, what they could take.
What is an omer?
Yeah, I didn't look up what an omer is. It's some kind of measurement that they had.
The dry measure, it was like a sheaf, a mean sheaf.
Yeah, some kind of dry measure, yeah. So he says, you know, and they did meet it with an omer. He gathered that much, nothing over, and he that gathered a little had no lack. They gathered every man according to his eating. So as much as you wanted to eat, you ate. And Moses said, let no man leave of it till the morning. Notwithstanding, in other words, Moses said, eat all you can eat, but don't leave anything for the morning. But anyway, notwithstanding, they didn't listen to Moses. But some of them left of it until the morning, and it bred worms and stank. And Moses was wroth with them. He was angry. You know, some of them said, well, I'm not listening to Moses. I'm going to stash some. I'm going to squirrel some away for tomorrow because I might want a snack in the morning.
Just in case.
Just in case. And when the morning came, you know, it got worms and it stunk. I remember in the old days, if you bought wheat, right? You get wheat, you know, flour. Mm-hmm. If you had flour and you left it for a long time, it would get weevils in it. Mm-hmm. And in the old days, they used to make a paste out of wheat when they hung wallpaper. And sometimes the worms, the weevils would hatch. There would be eggs in there and they would hatch. And then the worms would eat through the wallpaper. That's true. That's true. In the old days, that happened. Anyway, back to this. Just a little side thing for fun. So, and he was angry with them, and they gathered it every morning, every man according to his eating. And when the sun waxed hot, it melted. They didn't have to worry about refrigeration, because if they left it, it melted. If they squirreled it away, it rotted and got worms and stunk. And every day there was a new batch, fresh, like they had a bakery right there in heaven, the bakery from heaven. And it came to pass on the sixth day that they gathered twice as much bread, two omers for one man, and all the rules of the congregation came and told Moses. And he said unto them, this is that which the Lord has said. Tomorrow is the rest of the holy Sabbath unto the Lord. Bake that which ye will bake today, and seethe that which ye will seethe, and that which ye remaineth over, lay up for you to be kept until the morning. So on the sixth day, he says, okay, now you can gather twice as much. And if you bake it, bake it. If you boil it, or whatever you want to do. Eat it with peanut butter or whatever else you can do, and it'll hold because tomorrow's the Sabbath day. And they laid it up until morning as Moses bade, and it did not stink, neither was there any worm therein. And Moses said, eat that today, for today is the Sabbath unto the Lord. Today ye shall not find it in the field. 6 days ye shall gather it, but on the seventh day, which is the Sabbath, in it there shall be none. And it came to pass that as they went out, some of the people on the seventh day for to gather, they found none. So some of the people didn't believe it. And they said, well, we're going to go out and collect some more. And they disobeyed. And they tried to find it, and there wasn't anything there. So pretty wild. Mm-hmm. But, you know, when the Sabbath day was there and they were supposed to gather 2 days, it worked. It kept till the next day. It didn't stink. It didn't get worms. And they had what they needed on the Sabbath day. Verse 27. It came to pass that some people went out and gathered and they found them. Verse 28. And the Lord said unto Moses, how long refuse ye to keep my commandments and my laws? See, for that the Lord hath given you the Sabbath. Therefore he giveth you on the sixth day bread for 2 days. Abide ye every man in his place, let no man go out of his place on the seventh day. So the people rested on the seventh day. And the house of Israel called the name thereof manna, or what is it? And it was like coriander seed, white, and taste of it was like wafers made with honey. And Moses said, this is the thing which the Lord commandeth. Fill an omer of it to be kept for your generations, that they may see the bread wherewith I have fed you in the wilderness, when I brought you forth from the land of Egypt. And Moses said unto Aaron, take a pot and put a full omer of the manna therein and lay it before the Lord to be kept for your generations. As the Lord commanded Moses, so Aaron laid it up before the testimony to be kept. And the children of Israel did eat manna 40 years until they came to the land inhabited. They did eat manna until they came unto the borders of the land of Canaan. Now an omer is a tenth part of an ephah, just to clear it up. But you know, that's cool because they were only to keep it one day and eat it all. And the next day, if they kept any, it would rot. But on the sixth day, they took 2 days worth and it kept. But then God told Moses, who told Aaron, collect an ephah and put it in a pot, and it kept forever as a witness to the people. And it stayed in that pot all the years, and it was in the Ark of the Covenant. Mm-hmm. For a witness to the people, mm-hmm. to let them remember, and they could see what it looked like. Because God wanted them to remember how great a God he was, mm-hmm. and how much he would be their sufficiency and their strength. How cool. Chapter 17. And all the congregation of the children of Israel journeyed from the wilderness of Sin after their journeys, according to the commandment of the Lord, and pitched in Rephidim. And there was no water for the people to drink. Oh, my goodness. Wherefore the people did chide with Moses. What does that mean?
Quarreled.
They quarreled with him. They got mad. They, you know, this is the fourth time they've turned against Moses. And said, give us water that we may drink. And Moses said unto them, why chide with me? Wherefore do ye tempt the Lord? Mm-hmm. Now, why are you tempting God? He's promised to take care of you. He promised that he would supply whatever you would need. Why are you getting upset? And the people thirsted there for water, and the people murmured against Moses and said, wherefore is this that thou hast brought us up out of Egypt to kill us and our children and our cattle with thirst? So again, you know, why'd you bring us out here to die? We were better off in Egypt. And now they bring in the cattle and the children, you know, to strengthen their argument, to make Moses feel bad. And Moses cried unto the Lord, saying, what shall I do unto this people? They be almost ready to stone me. God, come on. You told me that you'd take care of me and you'd give me the answers, and now they want to kill me. And the Lord said unto Moses, again, he said unto Moses, we should count it up sometime, you know, how many times it says, and the Lord said unto Moses, go on before the people and take with thee of the elders of Israel and thy rod wherewith thou smotest the river, take in thine hand and go. Behold, I will stand before thee there upon the rock in Horeb, and thou shalt smite the rock, and there shall come water out of it, and the people may drink. And Moses did so in the sight of the elders of Israel, and he called the name of the place Massah and Meribah, because the chiding of the children of Israel, and because they tempted the Lord, saying, is the Lord among us or not? Massah means temptation, and Meribah means chiding or strife. So So they called the place Tempting and Strife. So that was that, is the Lord among us. So, you know, Moses smite the rock or whatever, and the water came out. And then we get to verse 8, and the whole new thing begins here. It says, Then came Amalek and fought with Israel in Rephidim. And Moses said unto Joshua, choose us out men and go fight with Amalek tomorrow. I will stand on the top of the hill with the rod of God in mine hand. So Joshua did as Moses had said to him and fought with Amalek, and Moses and Aaron and Hur went up to the top of the hill. And it came to pass when Moses held up his hand that Israel prevailed. And when he let down his hand, Amalek prevailed. But Moses' hands were heavy, and they took a stone and put it under him, and he sat thereon. And Aaron and Hur stayed up his hands, and the one on the one side and the other on the other side, and his hands were steady until the going down of the sun. Wow, pretty cool, huh? That's another great military strategy, holding up the rod. Yeah. So, verse 13. And Joshua discomfited Amalek and his people with the edge of the sword. And the Lord said unto Moses, write this for memorial in a book, and rehearse it in the ears of Joshua. For I will utterly put out of remembrance of Amalek from under heaven. Okay, that's a prophecy, because they didn't wipe out Amalek at that time, but later on in Samuel they do. They wipe out the Amalekites, and of course that was the downfall of King Saul, because he left. Now, not Amalek. Amalek was no longer alive, but whoever was his descendant and was the king of the Amalekites at the time, and but then Samuel did finish the job, which Saul did not. But so that prophecy came to pass many years later, which is really cool. Because what did he say? I will utterly put out of remembrance of Amalek from under the sun. And that's why he told Samuel that he had to wipe out every man, woman, child, and animal of the Amalekites. Mm-hmm. And Moses built an altar and called the name of it Jehovah Nissi, or the Lord my banner or canopy. And you know, even today in the Jewish religion, when they do a wedding, the bride and groom stand under a canopy, and that stands for God's protection over them in their marriage and that couple. That's their tradition. That's what they do. For he said, because the Lord hath sworn that the Lord will have war with Amalek from generation to generation. And there are no historical records that we know of from archaeology or anything else about the kingdom of Amalek. It's only from the Bible that we know about him. So that's pretty interesting. Let's see. I want to get into chapter 18, but I don't think we'll be able to get through it all because it's really important. So I think we'll stop there, okay? Because now we're going to get into some other stuff, and it's really important stuff as far as, you know, God dealing with Israel and Moses and the giving of the law. This is where the beginnings of it are. So we'll stop here tonight. What a great section, you know, how God took care of them and how, even though they complained and whined, you know, God had an answer to Moses to tell the people. And every time he met their needs, he met their whatever they needed to do, because God had promised Moses that he would be there for him and he would be there for those people. And so that's what he did, you know, and just like he promises today in the New Testament that when you stand for God, you'll be fully equipped unto every good work. So God was the same. He's the same then. He's the same today. Same God, same word, a little different situation, but God's still just as powerful, and he still honors his word just as he did back then. So, Father God, we thank you for this night. We thank you for loving us. We thank you for taking care of us, and we thank you for the great example of Moses. You know, he wasn't perfect. He at some times, you know, he just, if it wasn't for you, God, he probably would just thrown up his hands and left. But you kept encouraging him, and you kept showing him, and he didn't quit. Because he was a faithful man, and he was a meek man. He was humble more than anybody else, as we're going to see. So we just thank you, God, and for loving us and showing us these great records, that we can see that great example of believing and standing upon your word and upon your promises. In the name of your Son, Jesus Christ, we pray. Amen.